fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey, this is Nick Roth, and you're listening to Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 371 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, as always, we want to start off thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world. No matter which country you represent, thanks to all you men, women, and service animals for keeping us safe every single day and allowing us the freedom to be able to do this.
Amen. You couldn't said it better, honey.
Well, I've said it a bunch of times over the years.
Well, so. I know, but, you know, it's just, I feel like we can't say enough to thank them for what they do for us every single day. You know, to be away from your families and all that stuff, you know, it takes a lot. It takes a special person to do that. And we just want to make sure you know that all of us here in America love you guys and thank you so much for watching over us.
Also, Tracy, it's that especially this time of year, depression really starts setting in a lot of people. You know, like you even pointed out the other day, it's getting dark a lot quicker and you start having some gloomy days and stuff like that when fall starts coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just easier to kind of get down on yourself, but we just want to make sure people realize that don't get into your own head with some of this stuff. Treat every day like it's the middle of summer.
Heck yeah. Or, you know, just look on the positive side of things. And, you know, sometimes holidays are hard for everybody, but, you know, they're hard for me. But, you know, it kind of gets me my, juices flowing. I know it sounds dirty, but
energized might be a better term.
Energized. You know what I'm saying? So, but we just want you guys to know that, you know, reach out, talk to us, talk to anybody in our group. They're always there for you. And we've said it 100 times. If you need to talk, we'll give you our number. We don't have a problem doing that. You can also, you know, call the crisis hotline. It's 988. You can still text at 741-741. But, you know, let's kind of get in the good spirits and then, you know, and just enjoy life and, you know, just reach out to somebody if you need to talk. Nobody's not going to listen because we're always here for you all the time.
I was watching a college football game yesterday and they played like I guess it was like a little 30-second commercial, and it was from the Indianapolis Colts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically talking about just, you know, getting rid of the stigma of mental health. And it had, you know, had some players, and it had general manager and owner Jim Irsay and some others. And I thought it was a really cool commercial.
Yeah, it was. It was really nice. And, you know, to put that out there and just, you know, just everybody should know there's always going to be somewhere, you know, somebody there for you, somebody to listen. And we just don't want you guys to forget that.
No, absolutely. So, Tracy, we have a fun episode lined up. We also have a special guest, Annie Hamilton Emon. We had Annie on about this time last year. She's the director of tourism for Meade County, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And, they had just started last year the Battle Witch Festival.
Yes, uh-huh.
And they're doing it again this year. They said they were expecting 300 or 400 people last year. They got 2,000.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're expecting a lot more this year.
Good.
So we get to talk about that. I'll spare you the details for right now, but we get to talk a little bit about that, what they got new this year. And she gives us, again, a little rundown on who the Battletown Witch was.
Oh.
And why they're having the festival to
celebrate.
Well,
fun. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Now, with that being said, we have covered several haunted hotels over the years on this show. Most have been the bigger names, you know, of like the Jefferson Hotel and the Menger Hotel in Texas, the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, and of course the Queen Mary, the Hotel de Coronado, and the Cecil Hotel in California, just to name a few. I bet we've done 15 more easily. We've also done some bed and breakfasts.
We have.
And I thought, you know what? We cover a lot of the big name ones, but there are several lesser known haunted hotels and bed and breakfasts in the country. So why not cover a few of those today?
All right.
Now, keep in mind, these are shorter stories, so we aren't skimping on the stories. It's just there's not as much information as what it is on some of the other ones out there. Mm-hmm. But these are still decent sized stories for the most part. Let's start with, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this right. I looked up all kinds of different ways to pronounce this and I kept getting different names. Okay. It's French, so I'll probably screw it up.
But oui, oui.
That is not the name of this place. Taffrier's House. It's in Lafayette, Louisiana. And this is a bed and breakfast, not a hotel, but I really like the story, so I wanted to cover this one today. Taffrier's House was built in 1890 by, speaking of screwing something up, the gentleman who built this was Onesphore Coma. This is a luxurious bed and breakfast. It's only got 3 guest rooms, but at least they all have private bathrooms.
Oh, that's nice. That's a plus.
It does have an awesome atmosphere with its cypress walls and Cajun-style furnishing. The recent owners have taken a lot of care to preserve that Cajun culture and cuisine. They've got a nice menu there for, you know, eating. That's what menus are. Now, I've seen some pictures. This place is pretty awesome. It's got this big veranda so you can rest out when you want to enjoy the night air. The gardens here are simply beautiful. They're filled with these large oak trees and gorgeous flowers. And, of course, a gazebo.
Nice.
Just like at the Myrtles Plantation. The kitchen still has the original Coman family fireplace.
Ooh, I bet that's neat.
The sitting and dining rooms have been modernized over the years, and they look like they're pretty comfortable. So some of the older style places don't look to be as cozy and comfortable. Mm-hmm. This one actually does, though. And it may be because they've worked to try to make it as comfortable as possible. The guest rooms are homey with beautiful furniture and elegant drapes. The Taffrier House is right on the outskirts of Lafayette, which many consider to be the capital of Cajun country. Now, the city itself, it houses the Acadian Village and a living history folk museum, which is basically a typical bayou town from yesteryear. It's got a section that's dedicated to the tradition of Mardi Gras and a nature section devoted to the wildlife of the bayous.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's like colonial, you know, Williamsburg, as far as being a living museum.
Right.
All right. I'm sure you're thinking, but what about the hauntings?
How did you know?
Well,
get on with it, sir.
I just know. Well, the ghost here is Amelie. It's like Emily, but with an A.
Okay.
Amelie. Most seem to think that she is a permanent resident at the Taffrier House. Now, the Mosleys, who used to own the property, looked at Amelie as a trusted friend. And there's a lot of good reasons for that. Amelie apparently is a tiny woman. She's dressed in turn-of-the-century Cajun-style clothing. Peggy Mosley, the matriarch of the family, said she first encountered the spirit on a Sunday afternoon when she was surprised to find all of her lingerie laid out on the bed upstairs. Apparently it was all like laid out nice and neat. And all that. Now, here's the issue. This was right after she and her housekeeper, Lovella, had just finished putting away all of the lingerie in a downstairs hall. Wait. So they put everything away, and then they go back upstairs, and all of it is back out and neatly displayed on the bed.
Huh. Well, maybe she wanted to wear some of it.
Well, maybe. Yeah. Let's just get a good look at each one of them.
All right.
Being new to the house at the time, Peggy Mosley didn't really know what to think. She did her best to just kind of put it out of her mind and pretend it didn't happen. I don't know how you pretend something like that.
That's a new one on me. I don't know how you could do it.
But 2 weeks later, She was alone in the house. She was phoning a friend. Maybe she was playing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Could be.
I don't know. She hears some terrifying crashing and some splintering noises coming from the pantry area. She drops the phone and she runs to investigate. Peggy gets to the pantry area to find that every jar of preserves and other types of food were all lying smashed on the floor.
Oh, I'd be so pissed.
It was as if someone took their arm and just swiped all of this right off the shelves.
Mm.
The shelves were still in place.
It takes a long time to preserve stuff in a jar.
It does.
You know what I'm saying?
She put two and two together and figured, you know what? There must be some type of spirit in the house compared with, you know, with what happened last time and with what happened now. She would eventually notice many other types of paranormal activity. And she picked up on some other things, such as the spirit spoke French.
Oui, oui.
She didn't, though.
Oh.
So she couldn't understand what the spirit was saying.
Oh.
So Peggy asked one of her French-speaking friends to come over and help. It was a gentleman friend of hers. She had him come in and basically say this into the open air. In God's name, I will burn this house down if you misbehave. Then she threw in for good measure, leave my children alone and leave me alone. And if you wish to go on living here, there are house rules. For the most part, things calmed down after that, but it was obvious that Amelia didn't like hymns being played on the piano in the house. She splattered candle wax all over the keys and the polished lid whenever hymns were played. There were never any drafts to account for the mess when this would happen.
I can't figure her out. She loves lingerie, but she hates preserves.
And now she hates hymns.
Yeah. So what's going on with her?
Maybe she was promiscuous.
Maybe.
Which is why she likes the lingerie and hates hymns.
Yeah, that could be true.
Well, we're definitely reaching. One of the Mosley's neighbors identified Amelie as an unhappy woman who actually died in the house in an accident when she was 32 years old.
What happened?
I'll get to that in a minute.
Oh.
Mosley's mother says that she saw Amelie in the garden. She described her as a little Cajun woman wearing her hair in a bun, like somebody else I know.
Why are you looking at me? I ain't got no bun.
You got a bun today. She was wearing a gown, and I don't know what this is, of ashes and of roses color. I don't know what ashes of roses color is. She had a cleft chin, like John Travolta.
Mm-hmm.
And she was speaking French. And I think this is how they knew she spoke French, is from this encounter.
Okay.
Peggy's mother said that it was a pity because she would have loved to have talked to her. But right. I guess she didn't speak French either. Emily's mischievousness took a naughty turn at the wedding of Peggy's daughter. Mary, Peggy's daughter, was not amused when the punch that they made for the event, it was a homemade punch, apparently it was tasty and golden, but it turned a very odd color green. It appears that Amelie was seen in the kitchen pouring liberal amounts of green food coloring into the punch bowl.
Just kind of brighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, what the heck?
Yeah, who cares?
She didn't change the taste of it.
No.
Emily has also played the piano and been seen sitting in a rocking chair on the porch. Sometimes she gazes down onto visitors from the upstairs window, and apparently she causes some kind of a mysterious green light to rise up through the hall's floor beams.
I wonder what her deal is with green.
I don't know. I didn't really, when I put that, wrote this, I didn't put that together. But now that you've said it, it looks good. Maybe Emily hangs around to prevent others from suffering her fate. So you see, she drowned in the cistern after accidentally falling in while she was delirious with a fever.
Oh, man.
It's said that she actually saved Peggy's entire family and the home from a fire.
And that was her reward.
I guess.
Well, that's a shame.
One night, she was already dead. She was her ghost that did this.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry.
One night, the Mosleys awoke to find Amelie tugging at Peggy's arm, and the room was full of smoke. A fire had started in the dishwasher downstairs. Peggy seems to think that Emily is merely just lost. But the current owner, Richard Young, he has other thoughts on it. He tends to shy away from the haunted talk. He doesn't talk about it, mention it on the website, doesn't talk about it in interviews. He does believe, though, that the Catholic Church's decision to rule her death a suicide maybe has her stuck like in purgatory.
But why would they do that? Why would they say it was suicide?
I have no idea. I don't know how long ago this was. Well, if she was in Victorian clothes, this would have been back in the 1800s. I don't know. Maybe they just felt like that she drowned herself or something. I have no idea. But that's kind of what he thinks. He thinks maybe she's stuck there and right. Maybe that's purgatory for her.
Oh, wow.
How about that? Tracy, we're going to go to Castine, Maine for our next story, the Castine Inn. Castine, Maine is an absolute perfect location for a summer spot if you want to go visit up and try to take a little relaxing vacation. It's right on Maine's Atlantic Ocean's coastline.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
It is. It's actually bright and friendly, at least according to the reviews on TripAdvisor. Most people seem to enjoy it. Nothing but positives. It does have a cool dining room that's got murals all over the wall.
Fun.
The menu looks awesome. It looks like it's a very high-class menu, so I bet it's probably expensive. Just saying. This location has been an inn since 1898.
Ooh.
Guests mostly arrive by car today, but in its early days, Tracy, guests would arrive by boat down at the town wharf, and actually, some still choose to do that today.
Okay.
When you arrive at the little inn, you are greeted by a beautiful flower-filled front porch and someone to help you with your bags. That doesn't happen all the time anymore in places. You're also going to be offered a glass of iced tea, and that's just the beginning of the hospitality here. Many of the rooms here offer views of Penobscot Bay, and all of the guest rooms, including the two suites, have private baths. And a lot of, like I said, I mentioned that, and some people are like, well, I mean, why is that such a big deal? There's a lot of bed and breakfast where you don't get your own bathroom.
No,
you got to share a bathroom with maybe three or four other rooms.
I do not like that at all. So if you ever want to stay there at a bed and breakfast, you need to make sure it's got our own bathroom.
I will do so.
Thanks.
There are 19 guest rooms and a reasonably priced breakfast. So you're... it's a bed and breakfast, or it's an inn, not a bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. That's why I guess the breakfast isn't included. The garden on the grounds is actually listed as one of the Maine's most beautiful and finest gardens in the entire state. When you get to the dining room, there is a partial view of Penobscot Bay there. And you also have that beautiful mural that we talked about in the dining room. That mural was painted by Margaret Parker.
Very nice.
And I'm not exactly sure who Margaret is, but, you know, apparently she was somebody that painted murals.
So and I love that. I love to see murals on the side of a building and things like that. Those people are so talented.
Yeah, this one's really cool. I've seen pictures of it. The inn also has its own pub. Now, as far as the town, I guess, of Castine, it's not really a city, it's a town. It's one of the prettiest in Maine. And it's perched right on a seaside hill.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of beautiful 19th century homes. The town square is one of the prettiest in all of New England. Okay. Let's go on to some paranormal stuff.
All right. Let's do it.
It does seem like a beautiful place to visit, though.
Yeah, it sure does. Especially in the fall. I bet it's like crazy beautiful.
I bet it's crazy cold, too.
Oh, I bet it is.
I bet right now. Where it's like, it's been 85 all day today. I bet it was 10 there.
I'm just kidding. No, it's not that drastic.
No, it was probably, it's probably beautiful there today. Probably about 75, 80 degrees.
Yeah.
All right, Tracy. This is kind of a funny story. There's not a ton of paranormal on here, but apparently the owner of the inn at the time, Mark and Margaret Hodish, I think it's what it's pronounced, had no clue that the place was haunted until author Robin Mead reached out to him when she was writing a book to ask about the haunting.
Okay, she had no clue, huh?
No, she knew, but the owners didn't.
Oh, the owners didn't know.
So this was back in the mid-1990s. In fact, they responded back to her that the inn is not haunted. Well, that's not the same opinion that British travel writer Kenneth Westcott Jones holds, because Westcott Jones said this is the only place that he has ever seen a ghost.
Well,
he said that the Castine Inn is definitely haunted. So let's talk about his sighting. Westcott Jones and a photographer by the name of Tony Hudson, I guess they traveled together doing a lot of stuff. They were actually guests at the inn during the British general election in the early 1980s. So they stayed up all night waiting for the first results to come through on TV. And of course, you know, from where this is up in Maine and over in Great Britain, there's about a five-hour time difference.
Okay, I didn't know
so
that.
So if they're looking at 8 o'clock, you know, you're looking at 2 o'clock in the morning, basically, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. So they're staying up. They're trying to watch these first results come through. As the night drags on, they both fall asleep. Now, they're in separate rooms, but they eventually fall asleep. A little bit later, Westcott Jones wakes up to see a shadowy figure of a man in his room. Now, at first he thinks, oh, it's just Tony, the photographer, with maybe news of the election results. He asked him, hey, who won the Corydon Northeast? That's the area outside of London where Westcott Jones lives. Well, the figure didn't reply. In fact, it just looked at him. And keep in mind that Westcott Jones was still partially asleep. He then fully wakes up and he shouts, what the hell is going on here? Well, he quickly turns on the bedside lamp, and the figure, who looked to be an elderly man in waterproof clothing, just slowly faded away. Westcott Jones went back to sleep, although he says that he still didn't know what the results of the election was.
Oh my gosh, I'm surprised he went back to sleep.
This guy's local election must have been really been important to him, because that's all he cared about.
No kidding.
The next morning, he questions Tony Hudson, who assures him that he never entered his room, so it wasn't him. Nor did he play any kind of tricks. Westcott Jones reported the incident to the inn's staff. They asked which room he was in, and he told them what the room was. The staff member said, just matter-of-factly, oh, that's probably the old fisherman. So, if you ask the locals, they're not surprised that the inn would be haunted. They will tell you that Castine itself is renowned for its paranormal activity day or night.
Ooh, nice. Well, I mean, that makes sense if he was in, like, wet gear or whatever.
That it would be a fisherman.
Yeah. That's so cool he got to experience that.
Yeah, it's like, and the owners didn't even realize it. And maybe that was the only, well, it couldn't have been the only sighting.
Mm-hmm.
Because the staff members were like, oh, well, that's the fisherman.
Yeah.
So there had to be several other people reported, but the owners didn't know anything about it.
That is so weird. So I wonder how they felt after they found out about it.
I don't know. I don't have anything else on them.
Yeah.
All right, Tracy, let's mosey on to our last story. We're going to talk about a castle in Mount Savage, Maryland.
Mount Savage.
Tracy, Mount Savage, even though it doesn't sound like it by the name, is a pretty little town. And there is a corner of that town that will always be forever Scotland.
Scotland.
About 180 years ago, the uncle of President Franklin D. Roosevelt, a man by the name of Delano Roosevelt, of course, that's what the D stands for in Franklin's name, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He bought the rights to this property. He used it for his hobby, which was actually ironworks. Now, eventually, his ironworks operation outgrew the property, so he moved it to Pittsburgh. But what he did build on the estate was a replica of the Scottish picturesque stone castle called Craig Castle that was built in the Highlands of Scotland. This spectacular house is now a bed and breakfast, so you can go stay in this castle.
That's nice.
They also host several events like, you know, weddings and birthday parties and stuff like that. They've got a beautifully landscaped English-style gardens. The home itself is refurbished in Scottish baronial style with many period items, original gas lighting, and massive gas fireplaces.
Sounds cozy.
The library and the Great Halls are a very atmospheric place to kind of relax or to eat, obviously, whatever you're going to do. These six guest rooms all have Scottish names, which I don't have written down.
Mm-hmm.
Each room has either four-poster or French Empire slave beds.
Oh.
They did it upright. So back in the mid-1990s, when Tony and Judy Perino would welcome their guests with a multi-course breakfast and then give them the option for a five-course dinner prepared by Tony himself.
Well, that's a nice personal touch.
I mean, I could do that myself. If we just started our own bed and breakfast, maybe here or something. I'd be like, let me start you off with a bowl of Campbell's chicken noodle soup, followed by a ham and cheese hot pocket. Then your entree would be a Stouffer lasagna with some breadsticks flown in fresh this morning from Olive Garden.
That sounds about right.
We can finish it off with some green jello with grapes for dessert.
Wow, I'm hooked.
All right, back to the Perinos. At 4 p.m., they would provide their guests with lemonade or wine, along with some sweets and cheese, like in the lobby area, like a little snack time.
It's very nice.
In the winter months, they would actually cook up some hot cocoa.
Cook? That just sounded weird.
Oh.
Cook up some hot cocoa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how else are you going to do it? Microwave it?
No. Ooh, I love me some hot cocoa.
I do too.
Mm.
The castle sits high in the mountains of Western Maryland. The scenery is very much like that of Craig Castle in Scotland. All right, ghost story time.
Okay.
Well, don't.
I mean, you know. I meant it like okay, like don't I'm excited.
Whatever. Oddly enough, the ghost here is said to be a Scotsman by the name of Ramsay. He's one of the former owners of the place. So he arrives in Mount Savage back in the 1870s. He was obviously wealthy, and he was excited to find a home similar to what he was used to back home.
Mm-hmm.
He buys it. He moves his family in. Ramsay, by trade, was a brickmaker, but not just any brickmaker. He produced the very first glazed bricks in all of America.
Ooh, that's fancy.
He was also a stone freak. He loved anything and everything stone, everything from marble to granite. He just loved touching it, loved the feel of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for privacy reasons, he built a huge stone wall around the castle. The wall was just like the ones that you would find around big Scottish estates over in Scotland. Inside the wall, he created a beautiful garden with statues that were shipped in from Europe. Ramsay's life in the home was going pretty well until the Wall Street crash. When that happened, his fortune disappeared overnight.
Oh, gosh, can you imagine?
His brickworks company failed, and the castle was repossessed by the bank to pay off his debts.
Oh, my gosh.
In a rage for the turn that I guess his life had taken, he rushed out into the garden with a hammer and smashed all the expensive statues that were out there. The now impoverished Ramsay was forced to take a job as an ordinary laborer in a ceramics factory.
Hmm.
Brokenhearted, he soon became ill and died. He and his wife are actually buried in a Mount Savage cemetery in a vault made of Ramsay's glazed bricks.
Oh my goodness.
Former owners of the castle, Bill and Andrea Meyer, they know just how hard it is to actually leave that castle when you've been there for a while. They suspect that he never did leave the castle. Ramsay's footsteps echo around the empty third floor of the castle. There is also a man in a very dark colored frock coat that has been seen there, a type of coat that Ramsay was known to wear. He's also been seen in the library and in the Great Hall. Sometimes he follows guests as they explore the ground. Some guests have recorded instances of scratching noises coming from the Robert Burns room. These reports are so frequent and so consistent that it, they seem certain that Ramsey has settled back into his old home.
I mean, how heartbreaking is that?
It is. It's very heartbreaking.
Yeah. And I don't blame him. I'd probably want to go back and... I don't know. I just can't imagine to be losing all your money all of a sudden and, you know, like you said, his whole life changed.
Well, man, I started doing the math on that. The 1870s is when he came in, mm-hmm. and the stock market crash was in the 1920s. I mean, you're talking 50 years later.
Yeah. So his wife doesn't haunt the place, I guess?
I don't guess. That's the only thing I saw was on that. And like I said, it's not the most vicious haunting or anything, but yeah. I thought it was a cool story.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope he still hangs around.
Me too. All right, Tracy, we're going to take a quick sponsor break. We'll be back. I got some exciting news for the Gatlinburg Show, something we've decided to do. And then we're going to listen to Annie Hamilton Emon talk about the Battletown Witch. All right, Tracy, so this is something we decided to do. It's the last show of the year. It's going to be our biggest crowd of the year in Gatlinburg. There are still tickets available. Somebody wants to come and hang out with us. Well, we're going to have some giveaways. So we're going to sell some raffle tickets, cheap, dollar a piece, something like that. But we're going to give away a bunch of stuff. We're going to give away books, shirts, food products, firstborns. Maybe not that, because we're kind of done with our, you know, first, second, thirdborns. Mm-hmm. So we're not doing that anymore.
I think we're past that stage.
But we're going to give away, I don't know, there'll probably be, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 things that we'll give away.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that would be cool. We've not done that at any of the shows, but I thought it'd be fun.
Yeah, definitely.
So bring cash for raffle tickets. And plus, we're going to be sending out another email that'll tell people that eventually.
We're so excited to see everybody. Totally cannot wait for the show. And, you know, we're so thankful for you guys for taking time out of your lives to come and to see us and, you know, Tony Merkel and...
Eric Freeman Sims.
Yep, Eric Freeman Sims. And I just think it's going to be a blast. And maybe after all that, we can go get our moonshine on or something.
Yep, it's going to be a blast. I expect this to be the most fun show that we do all year.
Yeah. They've all been great, though.
No, they all been great.
They have totally been wonderful. And, you know, we couldn't think of a better place to end this year, so we're very excited about it.
Absolutely. All right, Tracy, so what do we got going on over there with...
Well, I must say, you guys have really rocked our world with these daggone iTunes reviews and Patreon, so I'm going to have to turn the page, so excuse that. I'll try to do it this way.
Are you Bob Seger?
Turn the page. Okay, so anyway, iTunes, Kay Cummings, Mojo Lobster, DS803, Baby Dust 1974, Jason B 007. You guys rock. And we had a crap ton of reviews for Jerry and Amanda's show, Wickedly Weird. So thank you guys for doing that as well. I know that means a lot to them. For our Patreons this week, we have Dolores Riggins, Victoria De Carvalho. Ooh, I think I messed that up, Victoria, honey. I'm so sorry. Vixen, Jamaica Lydia, Morgan Peterson, and Sean Morris. Thank you guys for your support. That means the world to us and the reviews. It really helps us out so, so much. And we just can't thank you guys enough for hanging with us all these years. I don't know. We're just so blessed and so thankful for you all. And hopefully you'll be hanging with us for as long as we can ride this thing out. So we just want to tell you how much we love y'all.
Absolutely. All right, Tracy, let's take a few minutes and listen to Annie Hamilton Emon. Hey, guys, I am here with Annie Hamilton Emon, and she is head of the Meade County Tourism Department and chair of the Battletown Witch Festival. We actually had Annie on last year because, if I remember correctly, it was the first year that y'all did the Battletown Witch Festival, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We were so excited to see people really interested enough for us to continue the tradition.
I know we were going to try to get down there. We had something else in that area the same day, and I was going to try to do both, and we ended up not being able to do both. But we had some listeners that actually went that lived in the area, and they said it was great. They had a good time.
Yeah, we expected a maybe 300-400 people. We had over 2,000 people come. We were ecstatic. It was such a wonderful, good event.
What have you guys done this year to improve on it?
Well, we're incorporating the traditional witch dance. We have some different speakers this year. We've expanded our vendor area, and we made it to where our vendors are very specific. They are all handcraft artisans, and they're selling crystals, doing jewelry, things like that. So they're specific for the people that would come to one of these events.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So if anybody come in, they're going to see stuff that is probably more to their liking. It's not going to be somebody selling, you know, blow up hammers that have nothing to do with the event.
Yeah. We try to make sure that, because it's such a niche thing for these people to sell. So we try to put the opportunity to them first on places where they're going to be able to market and sell a lot of their stuff.
Now, I know we covered this last year, but not everybody has heard that interview, and they may not remember. Give me a brief rundown of who the Battletown Witch is and why you're celebrating.
Well, we think that Leah's story really should be highlighting. 1840 is one of the first recorded ghosts in Kentucky. So she is the first recorded, I'm sorry, I know I'm doing finger quotes, but the first recorded ghost in Kentucky, because spiritualism didn't get really big until the 1860s and during the Civil War. So she really is an interesting character. She was a real person. We still work in the History Museum with her great, great, great grandniece. So we have everything that proves that she was a real person and was a witch. Well, a suspected witch. It was a very tragic story. She was too smart and too beautiful for the time. And when bad things happen and they need a scapegoat, she kind of became that. So she would use her knowledge of healing. She worked with native folk and things like that. And it just became a series of unfortunate events. Her father's crops did better. His barrels were better produced. And when people were starting to have issues, they started thinking, well, he has all the good fortune. I bet that his daughter is a witch. So unfortunately, one day in 1840, her parents decided to go to town and she stayed behind. Her neighbors got together, locked her in the smokehouse and burned the smokehouse down. And she's been seen ever since that night. Her neighbors took her body and moved it and put a bunch of limestone rocks on top of it because they kept looking out the window seeing her.
And, yeah, I'm sure that fixed the problem.
No, she's still roaming around 184 years later. But our whole purpose behind the festival is not to marinate on the tragic aspects of her life. We try to bring a lot of like-minded people together in a good place so we can celebrate traditions that led to the end of her life. And that's the main focus of the festival.
So Battletown, as we said, is in Meade County, Kentucky. Hop, skip, and a jump away from Brandenburg. There's a lot of cool stuff in that area. My family has had more good times at Otter Creek Park than you know, we could ever imagine. It killed me when they shut it down for that short period of time before the it was taken over. But you know, that it's just you know, I lived in Vine Grove for a while back about 20 years ago, so I've got a lot of good times in Meade County in that area. Tell me about the festival itself. Is October 28th, but you said that you've got like a whole week full of weird going on. Tell me a little bit about what you got going on at the festival and leading up to it.
So the festival itself, we have panelists, speakers, kind of like how you would have a comic book convention. We have speakers throughout the day. We have the witch dancers. We have food booths, food trucks, a giant kids area with activities. And it's just a really good time for people of all ages. Last year, we had everything from babies to grandmas come and had a wonderful time. And it is an all-day event. You can stay and have a good time all day long. The fun thing that we're going to do is everybody always asks us why it's not in Battletown. Well, we don't have a space big enough. So we're going to have a small festival in Battletown Park the night before. We're going to show the Leah Smock movie. We're going to do haunted hay rides. Kay Hamilton, who wrote the other Leah Smock book, is going to tell ghost stories around the fire. And then Thursday, we're going to have something called Spirits and Spirits, where we're going to do whiskey tastings with clairvoyance. And then Tuesday and Wednesday is ghost walks. Monday, nothing, because I do need a day off eventually.
Wait a minute. Did you say whiskey tasting with clairvoyance?
Yes, that is our new event for this year. It's called Spirits and Spirits. It's in Serenity Fitness on our historic Main Street. We do taste really niche and craft bourbons. We try to find things that nobody's ever had before. And during that night, the first hour, you could get tarot cards read, you could taste whiskey, you could hang out and eat. And then the second half of the night, we sit in the round with a clairvoyant, and she does a big group reading with us.
Do you guys have all these events listed on a website somewhere?
Yes. So on battletownwitch.com, you can see all about the event, but there's also a little tab that says plan your stay, and it has all the different events, the cool places to go. If you want to book a hotel, if you want to book an Airbnb, that's all right there on the website.
That's awesome. Tell me what do you think is different about this event as opposed to some of the other events that go on? What makes yours specific other than the actual Battletown Witch?
I think because we lean more into like kind of Wiccan and spiritualism and things like that. We don't go for like haunted and horror and stuff like that. We go more for an educational foundation. And don't get me wrong, it is not boring. You're not going to sit there and read textbooks and take tests. But we have the amazing Lady V coming in, who is a very, very storied and celebrated educator in Wiccan. And she's going to talk to us about like witchcraft was back then. She went to the Kentucky Archives to see if she could find even more on Leah than I know. We have Kay Hamilton come talk about her book. And then I do a solid 2 hours on the top of I do an hour on the top and an hour on the bottom and tell all of the urban legends, ghost stories, and everything associated with Meat Town. It is a very fun evening and afternoon. I always forget it's a super long day. but we do have a really fun day, and the panels really do make it. They sound like they're kind of boring, but they're really a lot of question and answer and back and forth. I even let people tell me their ghost stories at the end of the day. We just have a great time.
I must have missed the email asking us to be part of that panel. I'm just kidding.
Well, we still have room.
So let me ask you this. How long, you're the director of tourism for Meade County. Is this one of the biggest events that you guys put on all year?
So it is slowly becoming that. I think that this year's a skew because we have our bicentennial this year. Meade County is 200 years old this year. And then the other thing we have is we have the state, we have the fair. And I don't know if anybody is aware, Meade County has the best county fair in the state. We welcome almost 40,000 people over a week to our county fair. So being able to come in and do a 2,000 to 5,000 person event is a huge undertaking. But I think Meade County is equipped to handle it.
Yeah, it sounds like I said, Meade County is a fun place. I advise anybody listening, if you're within an hour to 2 hour drive, Meade County has a lot of things to do there. This would be a great time to be able to go and hit this up. I'm sure that once you get through with that, or if you want to make a weekend of it, I'm sure they're still doing the haunted attraction out there at Otter Creek. That one drawing a blank on the name of it, but that's one that I've went to for years. That was the first outside trail haunted house thing that I had ever went to.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have Nightmare Forest listed on the Plan Your Stay. And we have Field of Screams too, which is a haunted corn maze. Those are some really great things you can do at night. And new this year is Kentucky Tourism has an initiative called Kentucky After Dark, which is a 13-stop road trip, and the festival is one of the stops on that, too.
Awesome. Well, Annie, I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing some information with us about this, and I'm excited for people to get out there, and I think we can actually probably make this year because we don't have anything scheduled that day. So I think it'll be a chance for us to be able to come out and check it out finally.
Well, we are equipped for live remotes. I'm just letting you know.
Well, we might be able to make something happen.
All right. Well, thank you so much for letting me come on.
It's no problem. Get that website one more time.
It is battletownwitch.com.
Battletownwitch.com. Awesome, Annie. Thank you so much. And maybe we'll see you in a month or so.
All right. Thank you so much again.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for us this week. Thank you so much for everything that you guys do for us. It means the world to us.
It sure does. And we are excited for the weekend coming up. We'll be getting our stuff ready and cannot wait to see all of you guys. This is like a Christmas present for us. I don't even know how to say it, but you guys really...
It is our anniversary, so an anniversary
that's
present
very true.
Might have been...
That's
more
true.
Appropriate.
I kind of almost forgot that. It is our anniversary, but like I said, we are just so excited to see everybody. And we want you guys to have a blessed week. And till then, talk to you next week. Love y'all.